This episode of Yes But Why Podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Download your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/yesbutwhy. Amy Jordan, and this is Yes But Why Podcast. Yeah.
My jam is social justice, baby. And I'm a warrior. I will mess a motherfucker up. But,
cool.
But, you know, so there's all these projects that are going on simultaneously, and so there's a lot of diverted attention and action, and, you know, and I try to support that action, too, as much as I can. But, you know, I sought out to be a filmmaker. I was just like, these are my people. We're just being ignored. No one's making a movie. There's, like, maybe 5 books in the damn library about us. I gotta do this. So this was, like, my giveaway to the people, you know, so I just put all my time and energy into it because, I didn't know what avenues to take to look for. I mean, the Austin School of Film has been the best help. They have given me classes at low cost to no cost. They've let me use their facility. I mean, that's been my biggest support in terms of the film industry. I don't know anybody else in the film industry, you know, like, it's not that I don't want to meet people from the industry, you know, but I'm just a very authentic and real person, and I know that there's, like, that atmosphere of, like, not authenticness. Yeah. And I'm just, like, rough and tough kind of real girl. I was in the Army for, you know, 8 years, you know. I'm just, like, you know, I'm a get her done kind of person. Do it.
How'd you get in the Army?
I was homeless and I needed a way to get myself off the street.
Wow.
So I joined when I was 17.
Wow.
Yeah, I had my 18th birthday in boot camp.
Oof.
Yeah.
Did it help the way you wanted it to help?
Yeah, you know, it did. It gave me a lot of education. I mean, money for education. I have the Hazelwood Act, you know. The Army was, it was a good experience. I met people from all over around the world, you know. Yeah. It gave me the lift up that I needed, for sure.
Well, that's good. That's a sort of a good success story for the Army. They did something good here. They helped out. Yeah. Wow, that's really... where were you living? Like, I guess you were homeless,
was,
but like, where in the world? Where in the world? Here in
Austin? I was in San Antonio.
San Antonio.
I grew up partly in San Antonio and outside of San Antonio. So...
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you got into the Army, were you equally in your mind a social justice warrior, or was this sort of the beginnings of developing where can I put my energy?
Well, I've always voted green, like the Green Party, and I've always, you know, I've always been about social justice since I was like 12 years old, you know, making my little save the dolphin signs, don't eat damn tuna. But, you know, when I was in the Army, you know, it taught me, how to be disciplined, mentally, physically disciplined. And, you know, when you're in the Army, you're in the Army. That's all you can focus on. So that's why I got out of
the
Army, you know.
I'm glad that they let you out.
Yeah. Well, you know, they wanted to re-enlist me. And
sure.
I was going to do it. They offered me a very nice sign-on bonus.
Sure.
But when I got out 2 months later, my unit got attached to the 90th Division and they shipped out to Iraq. So...
So you were like, no, thank you.
I was like, you know what? Maybe I don't need to be in the Army.
Yeah, right?
I could never see myself hurting someone else. I mean, I could not. I don't ever want to hurt people. I don't care what they've done. You know, it's just, I don't want to hurt. I couldn't do it. I was a supply girl. I was just one of the, ordered the parts, made sure the machines run kind of person.
Were you in a place that had combat, but you were just doing the supply or?
No. I never left the United States.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you prepared, you got everything ready. Yeah. There wasn't any war. And then they were like, hey, I'm done. So I'm out now.
Yeah.
They're
much.
Like, oh, you got out easy. not easy at all. No. You worked very hard, I'm sure. Interesting. I wonder, did anything that you learned when you were with the Army help to give you fuel to lead to the next part? Because after you got out of the Army, is that what led you to use film as a means of your social justice?
No.
What happened in between there?
I was, I'm a musician as well.
Oh, great.
So I was doing the musician thing, and I was on television.
Like in a band?
Yes.
Oh,
I was
cool.
On television twice.
Oh.
I was on, what was it? The one that I was on that had the biggest, actual showing was AMC's Showville, and I came in second for a... They were trying to do like America's Got Talent. So it was cool. I had a film crew follow me around and I sang my songs,
Wow. That's fascinating. So you're a singer then?
I am. And I sing a lot of Apache songs and a lot of Nawa songs. And everyone's always trying to teach me their songs because they like the way I sing. So they're like, hey, learn this song next, so.
Are you learning other people's songs? Or are you trying to maintain singing the Apache songs
to keep them
out?
I like to learn some of those. Well, the Navajo language and the Apache languages are very close. They're similar, very similar. In fact, a lot of our words are the same. So I like to sing a lot of Navajo songs, and Chiricahua songs are pretty. Some Sioux songs are nice.
But you like to stay focused on the native music?
I'm a part of a... So it really got me focusing on one, having a daughter. When you have a child, you want them to be raised and know who they come from, where they are, So I wanted my daughter to know where she came from. So that's when I started getting more involved and learning about my own culture and language and history and so forth. And I became a part of the Native American Church.
Oh.
And we have peyote ceremonies. And we take that as a sacrament. And so, I met a lot of elders through that way of living and being what we call the Red Road, living clean and sober and not, engaging in any kind of, kind of talking bad about people. It's just trying to live in a good way, in a beauty way, is what some say. And I met all these elders and it just made me so sad because I'd hear their stories. They'd tell me their stories of how it was like when they were growing up and just not being acknowledged as Native people here. And it was very disheartening. It was very sad. And I helped one of my elders run for Texas Supreme Court judge too. He got a 250,000 votes and with a budget of $500.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So you heard their stories and got involved with them and wanted to tell their stories? Is that what led you to the creative storytelling part?
Yeah. I've always had, even when I was young, elders that kind of took me under the wing and wanted to, because they saw potential in me, And so they, I had elders from when I was 16, 17 years old, but as I started getting older, I wanted to hear their stories. I wanted to spend time with them. And it was just amazing. It's beautiful, So.
Just to connect with the older generation and everything like that.
Yeah, and they had it harder, a lot harder than we did. There was a lot of prejudice. And there still is prejudice, but there was a lot more back then towards indigenous people, native people, So I just...
I've dealt with a lot.
Yeah, and just the fact that a lot of environmental injustice is always it always lands on the colored people, lands on people of who are the the minority or the disparate the population that is ignored and pushed aside. So you find out that there is this much lead in the water, this kind of air quality around these communities, and it's just it makes you pissed off, it makes you upset, when I went down to the library, here in Austin, Texas, the capital of Texas, to look up Texas tribes, there was 5 books on the shelf. There was 2 aisles dedicated to U.S. presidents, but there was 5 books on Texas tribes, and 3 of those books were the same book. So, I mean, that kind of, it gets you a little, you know, gets you revved up.
And there are, do you think it was, it's more like there has been less, fewer books made speaking the history, communicating the history, or that those books have been sort of like put under the rug, not put in libraries?
You know, I think what it is that, you know, there was a genocide here that happened.
Yeah.
And Texas doesn't want to acknowledge it. They don't want to. And so you don't have any books, not one book that is written by a Native person. And you have all these books that are from the perspective of the settler or the colonizer's perspective. And so there's that disparity too, you know. So I just think that people want to celebrate the Alamo, and people want to celebrate, you know, we settled the West and Texas is just yeehaw and cowboys, but they don't want to acknowledge that for 11,000 years, there was 493 bands and tribes here in Texas, you know. They don't want to acknowledge that, you know, because then there would be, well, we have to acknowledge these people. Guess what? Now we have to acknowledge that maybe some of this land was theirs and some of these resources were theirs. And I think that's just the good old boys don't want that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be a tough situation. I'm often, you know, whenever people are talking about, like, the current situation of what's going on in the world, I'm like, okay, I agree that it is insane. But I think that, the current government that runs this particular plot of land is crazy. And their ancestors are crazy people. Who gets on a boat for weeks? Who's like, yep, heading out. Gonna go ahead and risk my family's life. Like, it's just a humongous trip. And I'm like, you know who goes? You know the smart people? They stayed home. They're the English who is who they are. Because they were like, go ahead, bud. I'm staying in my nice warm house. The idea of people traveling that far, the people that went, the people that were taken, every person that came into this land and were like, it's mine now. Insanos. I mean, from the get-go, I'm like, the whole beginning is insane. It's crazy. And yeah, all of us, every one of us descended from these insanos that came over on these boats are like, I'm like, guys, it's your job to temper that. You have it inside you. We're all descendants of crazy people. You need to now be like, hey, maybe we'd be nice. You know, maybe we respect all parts of history. We see everything from every point of view. We don't just go, it's our story. Woohoo! I put my flag down. Like, guys, happening before you got there?
You know, I can see. I agree. But, you know, I think that's why I wanted to do this movie, because if we create the dialogue.
Yeah.
If we create the dialogue, I'm not trying to, you know, hate on anybody, any race whatsoever, or I just think that creating the dialogue and having that forgiveness start and having that reconciliation start could be a beautiful thing for both parties. It could be this huge healing, you know, and that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to be a revolutionary, you know, in a good way. I don't want to try to, like, push anyone off. I'm just trying to, you know, acknowledge the people that are here and the stories that are here, and they're beautiful. Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice to acknowledge the full and true history of everything that happened around. There's beauty in all of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even the sadness. It's like, okay, yeah, then this terrible thing happened. Let's learn from that. What can we learn from that terrible thing?
Exactly.
That these people did, or that people did, or that happened from nature? Who knows? Like, okay, how do we fix that?
Typically, what happens after a genocide is erasery. Because a lot of times people don't want to remember what the things that they did, or the people that maybe they came from that did these things. So, so erasery is a big part of the genocide. You know, there's like certain steps that happen. So if we erase these people, and that's what the history books, when I was taught growing up, was Native people either moved to the reservation, or they went, you know, they left, or they all died. Now they don't, they're extinct. They don't exist here, but that's just not the case. You know, but this film addresses that. This film, Keep the Fire Lit, Lost Tribes of Texas, you know. And I did get a little bit of slack for calling it Lost Tribes from some of the Native community. Because, like, we're not lost. We know where we're at. And I was like, I know. But, you know, when people look at this film who aren't Native, they got to see Lost Tribes of Texas. And they're going to be like, oh, this is about the tribes of Texas. I mean, I couldn't put ignore tribes of Texas, although that's really what it is.
Though, to a certain extent, the word lost is just marketing. I mean, it.
That's how my brain operates.
Yeah, they're the idea of the word of indicates mystery. There's something we need to learn, and everyone loves a mystery. Ooh, what's that?
Lost Tribes of Texas.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Where? What happened to them? I want to know. Right? Yeah. No, it was exactly right.
So I mean, I.
You're gonna get flagged from too many people.
I know. I try to make everybody happy. You gotta really get. I was like, "Well, where's my tribe?" And I'm like, "Dude, you know, I had $5,000 to work with. You know, it was really, really hard. If you would like to make the next one, please contribute some money." You know?
No, you know what though? You have to respect your own skills. Like the stuff that you know, even just the stuff you've told me about, and I've known you for 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Like. Just the skills that you've discussed, that you've done in your life, these things have equipped you to be where you're at, to be the best communicator for that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know how to write a grant. I don't know what that's about, right? You also have had various different experiences that other people have not had, and that allows you to see the world in a wider perspective than other people. If you live your life in one view, and this is it, whether you are... you know, a soccer mom or an elder of a tribe, you've seen the world in your one way. And when somebody presents another way, sometimes you're like, oh, hey, too much for me. But you've seen so much, so many different points of view, from being homeless to being in the army. I mean, like, who even gets those two? Like, those are two really intense, amazing life experiences as far as like knowledge and then like different styles of learning how to live and deal with people. I mean, I have high respect for anyone who is homeless because I really feel like they're living a style of life that is just not what is the norm. And so people treat it in this one way. And I'm like, you know, some of them are sad and we should help them. But some of them aren't sad. And you need to just respect whatever they're doing, wherever they're at in their journey. They need to be there right now. They either want to or they're having a hard time, but they're like moving through it. And it's like, we need to respect every part of everyone's journey. And so anyway, what you're bringing is solid. And when people tell you that you're not making the right decisions, you have so much knowledge that puts you in the place to know what is the right knowledge. Ooh, like even from communicating the right things to the right people and knowing the other side. Like when you're like, when the people who aren't part of the tribe see this movie, they're going to read this and this is going to communicate. That's so smart. Like you've looked at it from this other side. Most people, especially with documentaries, because you're so deeply in that world, can't then separate yourself and the outside and go like, okay, so a stranger. I'm a stranger. I know nothing. What's this? Movies. What am I going to get? Picks a title that gives intrigue enough to go like, wait, what? I'm into lost things. What? I'll take it. I don't know. I'm just saying. I support you.
Thank you. Oh, I appreciate that very much. You know, and you can't make everybody happy, and you know, I'm not trying to, and I hope that this film gets enough attention and enough, or I at least get a little bit of credit from the film community. I don't know how they're going to take it, but that they're going to be like, "You know what? We need to help her make some more." Cuz I would love to do a series because there's only so much you can say in 75 minutes. And that is one of the reasons why I'm going to have a book come out with a movie.
Ooh.
So that for those, you know, learned academic people that are like, oh, where does it say this? You know, I could be like, well, no, it says it right here. So there you go. Get off my case.
You know what's interesting? I've recently found out, look at you, you're ahead of the game again. And maybe you just know this and I'm just finding out about it. But recently somebody told me that like, there's like it's still a huge like book reading group to the point where even though there's so much technology, you can like listen to books if you want. You can like listen to podcasts. You can listen to all sorts of stuff that some people really are like, I would rather read it. I met a woman who turned her interview podcast into a book. And because I was on a podcast group, they're talking about that. And I was like, how do you even do that? And she sent me a private message and was like, this is what I did. And the crazy thing was more people, she made an audio, like a record of the book so that people could just get a digital download if they wanted and just see the book in that way, or a printed copy. She said she sold like 4 times as many printed copies.
Wow.
That like there were just so many more people interested in this printed idea. And you're right. Like the printed word matters. And I think it matters to the point we were making earlier about the idea of erasure. Like, don't, like, make books. More books should be made. There should be multiple books put out there, yes, as many as you can, because the more we can do to combat this idea that at some point, and they're all over, we like to pretend they're in history, but they're not. there are people that are trying to make history say stuff that it, yes, didn't actually happen. You're like, even, oh, my husband and I follow like news stories and stuff, and we follow them for years to the point where sometimes he'll go, hey, guess what? I just read this article. Now they're claiming this thing that we know is a lie is the truth. And we're like, no. And we'll like have all these like records of like links and stuff. And we're like, we proved you. What are you doing? Why are you saying this? Because you're right. They turn things that were rumors into the truth. They change, right, everything. They keep saying it.
Well,
it becomes the truth.
One of the things that I found out too from an archivist called Randy Barnes, he's really, he helps the tribes here in Texas, is that some of the first books about Texas tribes, there was this, I forget his name, but he lived in Pennsylvania, he lived in Philadelphia, and he never even came to Texas, and he wrote a book, and that book was copied, like basically they used that book, and then someone else wrote a book basically copying that first incorrect book, and then someone else wrote a copy about the second guy who wrote from the first guy who wrote an incorrect book. So it just kept on doing that, like, you know, 10 books later, they're all trying to copy the first guy, you know, basically copying each other, and the first guy didn't even show up to Texas, had never even seen an Indian. It's just like, and that is our Texas history of the Native tribes, and that's just makes me upset.
Sadly, that also sounds like the story of how the Bible was written. It was like a guy 100 years later was like, dude, did you hear there was a crazy dude? I'm writing a story. And there are three other guys. No, I'm going to write a story. I was like, all right, guys.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like so many people that are distant from the actual history trying, right, to put it down.
Right. Right.
So when you are you you're still active in the community, are you trying to keep a like regular current record of, or do you already have a current record of the stories of the specific tribe that you're part of, or like are you helping other tribes to like get their stories collected?
Well, you know, and yes, that should be like definitely, it is a priority of mine, but I'm also trying to do language restoration. Mm. I'm also trying to do seed saving. I'm also trying to do women's health and women leadership and supporting women in, you know, as a community, because there's a, you know, there's a lot of learned behaviors that are just not healthy, and we're not the original tribal way of being, you know. So yes, and one of the things I am trying to do with the Turtle Island Arts Festival, the first Indigenous film and music festival to ever happen in Texas, is I want to give out some scholarships to Native youth so we can encourage the youth to write these stories and get these stories down, you know, because, you know, my elders always say, you know, you're already halfway done with your life. It doesn't matter. Everything you do up to this point doesn't matter. It's what the youth, you know, they always reiterate that in so many different ways. Like with the seventh generation, we're always thinking about the next, you know, next generation of the, you know, next seven generations. So, but yes, there are some stories from the Ice Age times. From places that are like these remote areas in Mexico, these Apaches that don't speak Spanish, don't speak English, they basically live completely off the grid, you know, and they're just, you know, they probably don't even have government documents of the Mexican government. Doesn't probably have any Mexican documents of them, but that I would love to get the stories of. And a really important story for me that needs to happen, and maybe it might be my next film, is how to heal generational trauma. Mm. How do we heal, you know, because, you know, trying to heal from my own trauma, you know, and I had parents that were both really young when they had me, and then, but it was because of the trauma they experienced, you know. My mom was like 14 when she got pregnant, and my dad was 12.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's super intense.
And so, and he, my dad was a product, his mother was raped when she was 11. So now we have this generation, you know, you see this. So like seeing it from the tribal perspective, this generational trauma of being forced off our land, having our identities changed, being told that we're not existent? How is this affecting the psyche? And then try to find a way to, what are people doing to heal that generational trauma is what I would like to do.
Hmm.
Sorry, I'm going off subject, but.
No, everything that you're interested in is all the subject. That's, no, that's really fascinating. I guess that's sort of like a future project, not something that you've got going on.
No.
Interesting. Do you think people in the tribe are open to that kind of stuff? Like to people coming in and talking to them about their feelings and.
Well, you know, I think that it's happening. I'm watching it happening. People taking back their sovereignty and acknowledging themselves as sovereign and already getting back to their cultural ways is kind of healing to me, healing that generational trauma. So if this movie got made, you know, it would definitely help the movement that's already happening, I feel. So there's already that dialogue that's happening in a lot of communities, even how men treat their women and how, you know, because that family structure fell apart too in a lot of ways in different communities, you know. But again, it ranges from tribe to tribe and community to community, so if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think about the 48 contiguous United States and the area of all the people, and I think about other families in all different groups that have been broken apart, and a lot of the trauma that we're finding out now because the internet exists and we have the ability to talk to each other, that all of a sudden things are coming up that we're like, by the way, we're all real mean to each other. Is there a way that we could stop being mean to each other? Like, as a group, could we make a decision? And I feel like, I mean, it's going to be it's still an uphill battle, and we're on like the first step of like the highest, so many steps. But I do have hope that, you know, there are going to be a lot of things change, even in the film industry.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, sort of a distant like thing. Your involvement in it has more to do with social justice. And I love that. And that's probably best. Because the film industry has a lot of negative situations that are going on. I try to keep tabs with my friends like in Hollywood and other places to be like, do you think it's better? Is it getting better? Or are more people getting more roles? Are there other things that are going on? Like, what do you think is the move? Is it really going to happen or what? Right. And I don't know. I think if we all try and we all work towards stuff.
Yeah. I mean, talking dialogue is the most important thing, admitting, you know, acknowledging the truth, because you can't, truth is truth.
Yeah.
You know? And it's gonna come to the surface, and it's gonna make its way. One of the things that I did in the film that was really, really awesome that I got to participate, 2016 was an amazing year. There was just so much momentum one of the things I did for the film is I actually walked to help raise money. I walked from Austin to San Antonio and I Facebook lived it. And it was, I was hoping people would join me, but they just kind of like, were like, you're good job, Fox, you know, but it was, you know,
driving next to you in a car.
Exactly. They like give me a drink and they like, they leave, you know.
Oh my God.
But then, or take a selfie with me. And
take a little bit of a walk with you.
No. But then shortly after I walked from Austin to San Antonio, and it was very spiritual for me, you know, because one, I got to see how the land was being mistreated, and, you know, like, there are certain places from here to San Antonio that are just dirty. It is so dirty. Yeah. I'm just like, oh my God. And you don't know because you're in your car and you don't pay attention. There was this one place when I was walking where there was just thousands upon thousands of mice, and I'm like on the access, I'm on the 35 access high, you know, road, and it was like, do I go into the traffic or do I step onto these mice? And I was just like, help me, why have I decided to do this?
Wow, I wonder what the mice are even about.
I don't even know,
like,
but
what's near there that they're into? So crazy.
It's nature out of balance is how I saw it.
Sure.
But
those mice need to be all over, not just one spot. Crazy. Yeah.
And then another thing I participated in, short, like 2 weeks later, and this was during the summer, mind you, and there's this thing called Peace and Dignity. It's a 5,000-mile trek that starts from Alaska and ends in Panama, but they also have people that are at the tip of South America that are coming in, and it's all these indigenous communities, and they're carrying the prayers of their people. They're carrying the prayers of the missing women and children. They're carrying the prayers of the youth suicide or the drug addiction on the res or whatever. And it is it was one of the most powerful things I got to participate in. And, you know, you can't have, well, there's a lot of stipulations to even to run. You know, it's a relay race. It's a relay. So I ran from Dallas to Austin, and I did, I think, 12 or 15 miles, you know.
You've got that army training. I was going to be like, wow, think of the training you had to put in. And I was you're prepared.
But the only thing that, it was in August. It was in August.
It's terrible.
My shoes were like, they were like melting onto the road. And I was just like, I was just like dying out there in the heat, you know, but it was a prayer, you know, and it was a really good prayer. And
yeah, that's a sweat lodge. It was powerful. Texas in and of itself is a sweat lodge for sure. Wow.
I'm going to post that somewhere. I'm going to tweet that Texas itself. If you want to do a sweat lodge, just come to Texas. Every day is a sweat lodge.
What do you need to do? Like, hang out in the park. Go
just,
hang out with the homeless person
in your car.
For a day. If you have a car, don't sit in your car. No. All the time. It's safer.
But
what was the event? Peace to...
Peace and Dignity.
Peace and Dignity.
And it's been going on since the 90s, and they have it every 4 years. That year in particular, they ran for the seeds. And it was crazy because the farmers were farming. The corn was being harvested, so there was just seeds all over the highway of this corn. But you see these massive machines that are harvesting this corn, and the guy inside is like this big, and you can just see the detachment from the food. Like, you know, he has no connection to that seed. He has no connection to what he's doing. And that's another thing that I feel really strongly about is, you know, that's the reason why we overeat and we're eating all the sugar, is because we don't have that connection to the food anymore.
Yeah.
And seeing this man who's producing all this food, he has no connection. I mean, it's just this, it looks like bigger than a tank. At least like this machine was just huge. It's crazy. I was kind of scared. I was like, something out of Star Trek.
Yeah. That's a dangerous machine. You don't want to get in the crosshairs of that.
So I wanted, and that's included in the film, you know, I wanted to include these stories of this, you know, natives are already trying to work to heal each other and unify and bring all, you know, there's a prophecy called the Eagle and the Condor. And it's about uniting Turtle Island. It's about uniting North America, the North American tribes and South American tribes, you know. And when that happens, Turtle Island will be healed, you know, and the people will be in harmony again, will be in balance. So
I hope that happens.
I hope too. Me too. I really hope that happens. It's my dream. It's my heart's desire.
Yeah. You're doing a good job putting the information out there.
I try. I'm just one fox.
Yeah.
Just one fox. But, you know, and, you know, to me, you know, there's a lot of people too that have been doing this for a long time. A lot of like Juan Mancias and just other people in the community have been doing this for 30 to 40 years, trying to bring these issues to the forefront of our consciousness too. Into the mainstream.
So. Yeah. Have you thought about interviewing them?
They're in the film.
Oh, cool, cool.
Yeah, they're in the film. I have interviewed them.
Oh, awesome. So. No, I just meant like, so that like, because you seem to have your finger on the pulse of like how to get the information from, like, you deal in the human-to-human receiving the stories and that part, and also even this spiritual awakening involved in running 15 miles, which in and of itself is a spiritual awakening, but coupled with the heat and the powerful prayer involved in it is an amazing experience.
Yes, yes.
But like bringing that all together, I just wondered if there was another, like you just seemed good at communicating that. And I wondered if maybe there's more of a way to get more information out. I mean, of course that's your effort.
Yeah. That's what Keep the Fire Lit's about.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
You know, the film is really my giveaway to the people because I respect and love these people so much and I want to see them rise. You know, that's what I want. You know, I want them to be acknowledged.
Yeah. Give them a voice.
I do. And they're so good, you know. And we are. We will.
Absolutely. Empowerment's important. And you're doing a good job of it. Absolutely.
So it's not about me. It's about them.
Speaking of which, you were talking about how the elders keep talking about getting the youth involved. And you're working on a couple projects getting the youth involved. Are you also teaching and getting, like, younger filmmakers involved with your work? Because I bet you there's a... bunch of ladies in college right now that would love to join you.
Well, you know, right now I do a lot of community organizing, and I've organized a lot of events in Mexico, because where the film ends is we're in Mexico. It's the first time we've all gathered, and it happened. The film ends, you know, President Trump is being inaugurated. We're crossing the border. There's this giant desert, like, you know, like windstorm, dust storm. And we're having the first ever Apache reunion in 150 years, you know. So I've been doing a lot of organizing, keeping those reunions going. And we're having another one in May. And I also done some organizing where I'm trying to get the Apache women together so that we can share songs and share how to eat right, and like learning how to cook traditional foods and things like that. And that, of course, involves the youth, you know. So, and I just participated in my very first sunrise ceremony, which is an Apache coming of age ceremony that was really beautiful. And I had the honor and the privilege to be asked to be a godmother for one of the young girls that was coming of age. And I've known her for a long time, and I met her and her grandma. We're from the same tribe, the Lipan Apaches. Through all the activism that I've done, she was taking her grandbabies with her all the time, you know, and I was really happy. I was really happy to be chosen as her godmother, you know. And it's a big deal, because that ceremony really hasn't been done in Texas in a long time, you know. And we had White Mountain Apaches come down, bring their elders and their medicine people to help facilitate that, and to, you know, give us that opportunity as a tribe to heal.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's beautiful that they're doing these sort of rituals.
Well, it's important, you know, there's markers in our lives. We don't, that, you know, they need to be acknowledged, and especially for young women and young men too, when they're coming into age where they're going to be, they can have children, you know? And as someone who came from some young parents, I can tell you, you know, it's a very serious thing to bring life into this world, you know? And when you put that emphasis on the beauty that it is and the responsibility that it is, then it becomes that much clearer in their life to be able to choose a good partner and be able to take their time in that decision.
How do you think you got to be so... You have a positivity to you, a sort of like a motherly, and I know that maybe it's because you had your own child, but like you seem to want to take care of everyone, and you're doing such a good job to take care. How do you think you got there from not having people take care of you?
Like, you know, I was the oldest. I was the oldest. My mom had five daughters. You know, and it was really hard, you know, but I always took care of my sisters, and, you know, I don't know, it's just, it always feels better to give than to receive.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the highest aspiration for any human being, regardless of their race, native, non-native, whatever, is to be of service to the people, you know, because when we start thinking like that, then we all start to come into harmony and balance again as a society, as a, you know.
Yeah.
Just the way I see it.
People always think of that too in such a like weird way, like, oh, well, I don't want to have to do this negative thing. And I'm like, you could do anything to help other people. Education of any kind, you're helping other people. Like, I personally, you know, I know that, you know, you have a young child, and so you've been through what I'm going through, which is the first couple of years that are kind of like, wait, what's happening? Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what day of the week it is. Like, he's, when he turns two, I mean, honestly, I assume by when he goes into school, then I'll have some semblance of a regular life, but this sort of like wild, weird part of my life, I personally am looking for, like, what am I going to do? Like, because, you know, I teach theater, but I don't teach as much now because I'm home with the baby. And it's like, oh, goodness, what can I do? And the first thing that occurs to me is like, well, what does the world need me to do? Like, and I wondered if that was like a mother thing, and that like just happened, like it was born in me because I had the child. And then that part of me was like awakened and was like, okay, now you're sort of mother earthing it. Like, you gotta care for other people, because I if there was a book written about the years before I had the baby, it could certainly be titled Selfishness, a Study. Like, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's good.
I mean, I didn't do anything for anybody else, I'll tell you.
You know, and I think, too, that we're, the way that the mainstream kind of, they kind of teach us to glorify that kind, you know, that kind of behavior, too. And we don't reward the other kind of behavior where selflessness is rewarded versus, like, being selfish is rewarded more, I think.
Yeah, no, you're 100% and right.
I think, you know, even in, like, you know, we glorify, we don't make people famous because they did all this selfless acts and are this really awesome human being.
Yeah.
We glorify this person that is selfish and conceited and egotistical,
right,
and narcissistic as possible.
Yes.
So it's the kind of culture, too. It's a cultural thing, too, because, like, my daughter, she's being raised in the traditional, a lot of traditional ways. I take her to ceremony all the time. We go to all these gatherings. She goes to powwows. You know, she already, just by watching everything, is of service. You know, and a real big important thing in our culture is giveaway. You know, giving, you know, being able to give something, especially the things that are the hardest things to give.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are a society that places so much emphasis on the material, and we are not a society that places more on the spiritual and the more of the, of that, you know. And the Native people believe that you're creating, you know, you need to do it now, not until after you die to get that spiritual reward. The spiritual reward is now, you know. You have responsibilities to yourself, your community, and your family, you know.
So, yeah.
So that's how I see it, you know. But I have been always a little caregiver.
You're nurturing.
I am.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good for you. That's good for your family. That's good for all the people that you care about and that you're going to work your social justice for sure.
Oh.
I was like, woe betide my son who gets the first year of unselfishness. No.
The elders say, too, you know, that babies, children are the closest beings to God. And they say that they have more to teach us than we have to teach them.
Mm.
And so, you know, to just show them unconditional love and patience, and that they will teach us, in turn, teach us more things than we will ever have the opportunity to learn, because we lose things as we get older. We actually kind of get dumber, I think.
We definitely do. 100%. Yeah. For sure.
Children are the most honest, most, like, brutal, to the point. Like, they're just like, well, why is this?
Yeah.
You know? And you're like,
you're right. Why is that?
No one's asked that question. Why? Violet, my daughter, does it all the time. And I'm just like, Violet, no.
It's like, sweetheart, we don't live in a logical world. I'm so sorry. That's not what happens.
Yes.
Things get decided by committee, and mostly people don't care in that committee. So sorry.
Yes.
That's how it works out. I'm very sorry about that. It's funny how much, you know, children teach you. And I mean, like I said, my baby's still so young. I'm like fascinated by how your child was so well behaved that she could be on a film set and like, and, like, how she's, like, into it and, you know, I mean, super great. She'll be the next one leading the interviews.
I know, right? No kidding.
Yeah.
Fire Lily Red Sky. Yeah, she was a little trooper, man. She was there right along with me, and it shaped her mind. It really has. I remember there's so many stories I have to tell, but I think the best story I have was when we went to Standing Rock. You know, I was interviewing this tribe called the Carrizo Como Crudo tribe of Texas, and Juan Mancia is the tribal chairman of that tribe, and he was very, very kind enough to bring me along with him, along with seven to eight other veterans, and we brought some food and supplies and money up to Standing Rock. Do you know about Standing Rock?
Yeah.
And we went in October, and it was really beautiful. It was just so much unity, and it was like just so historic. It was like a historical moment to be there. And Fire Lily is at the Seven Council Fire, you know, she's just a little girl, you know, and there's a big old thing of tobacco, and we use tobacco to pray with. So she, you know, you're supposed to grab a little bit of tobacco and during the morning and then say your prayer and throw it in the fire. And my little girl's just grabbing handfuls of tobacco and throwing it in the fire. And I'm just like, oh, there's not going to be no more tobacco. And I was like, no, Fire Lily. And then I was corrected, and no, we need her prayers. And I was just like, oh my God, please, no. And they just let her. But she went to each of the four directions and she put the fire, you know, not like anyone told her. She just did it instinctively. And it was just really beautiful. And I was like, you're right. We do need her prayers.
Yeah.
You know, we do. And it was just, Standing Rock was such an amazing and also sad and terrified. Because when I went back the next time, they had arrested so many of the leaders that were organizing it. And there was also just, they had broken an old lady's wrist and they had blown up this girl's arm. And it was just, everybody's emotions were just like running high. Yeah. It was really, 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 really sad. And, but you know what? It gave birth to so many other movements. And it was just a seed, the fire that just keeps spreading and spreading and spreading. And I was walking or driving up here, and there's people protesting outside of Wells Fargo.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah. And that really, I felt like it's that all of that divesting, all started from Standing Rock. You know, so, and that's part of the film, you know, because I wanted to show the connectivity of Texas tribes and along with other tribes, you know, I wanted to show how they support each other. And that pipeline is coming to Texas. And the owner the CEO is from Texas. And so I wanted to show that connectivity of Texas might not recognize a lot of these tribes, but the other Native people know that there are Native people here in Texas. So I wanted to show that in the film.
It's a terrible situation for sure.
It is, but you know, it's getting better.
And I like your positivity and that you're right that, you know, negative things can definitely inspire good things to happen. Yeah, you know, it's funny. You were talking about how 2016 was this great year and I was like, oh yeah, I don't think of it that way. But but I only don't think of it that way because it sort of was shrouded in this sort of negativity of the Trump election. Yeah. And I, from the moment that happened, I was like, this will be better. And they're like, no, this is terrible. And I go, no, you're right, it's terrible. But the terribleness will lead to good things. It's got to get super terrible. And if this guy's the super terrible, I'll take him. There could be much worse, okay? I'll take him. I'll take his red hair and his crazy words. Cool. Because there could be a lot worse.
Yes.
And I just say, if he can inspire us all to get so mad that we are creating, that like movements come up where we say, everyone deserves respect. That sounds like a good thing, right? Like, oh my God, people have been hurting people physically and emotionally for years. Unacceptable. Seems like a good move. Like, okay, I get that he's terrible, but look at all these cultural things that we're starting to open our eyes to. Even the ideas of what you're talking about, like everything about what you're doing is like so spot on, like culturally, like timing wise, like people want it. People want to know about the history of all of it. Like all the immigration stuff. I'm like, guys, this is Mexico. What are you talking about? What do you mean? One day a guy put a sign up and said, by the way, this spot's called Texas. They're like, oh, all these people just moved in. This family's been living in like San Antonio their entire lives for hundreds of thousands of years. You can't just decide they're not part of the, no.
Yeah.
No. Even like, I didn't even know. I watched this thing and where it was like Mexico literally went up to Colorado.
Yeah.
And it was just the American colonists who were just like, mine now, mine now, mine now, mine now. And I was like, I didn't even know that. Like that is like the idea that it's like any bit of this like ownership, get out of here with your ownership.
Right. Well, and that's another thing too, especially like even my tribe, we were migrational, you know, we followed the food, we followed the seasons. Sure. And, you know, we'd all come here whenever the pecan season was going and pick the pecans, or whenever the tunas were ripe off of in Nepal, we'll get those. But you know, it was a seasonal thing. And so like the Lipans, we'd come to through Big Bend or down to northern part of Mexico in Cuauhtla, and we'd come all the way back up to San Antonio. We migrated, we moved around. And it was just the way it was. And one of the things in the film that was really good that I pointed out, or I didn't point out, the person I interviewed pointed out, he's a fluent speaker in the Lipan Apache dialect, which is presumably a dead dialect too, and it's not dead. He told me, like, I grew up right over here, you know, on the Rio Grande, right down the street. And he was telling me the history of that through with his own language. And he, in the United States and Mexico, they both would just kind of kick his family aside. Oh, wait, y'all are Mexicans. Oh, wait, y'all are United States. So you have, like, people, one generation born in Mexico, one born a generation in the United States, one. And so you have these families that are just born on both sides because, you know, we didn't want you, we don't want you, we don't want you, you know. And the thing is, those people have stories that date back, you know, 11,000 years. So it's kind of stupid. I'm sorry, but it's just...
No, you're right.
It's the narrative that's being played. The narrative that's being played is that these people don't belong. And who does that narrative benefit? And that's what we got to ask. Those are the questions we have to ask. Who is benefiting from this narrative of, you know, this invasion of people? And so that's something to think about, you know.
I think about that all the time, like with reference to, I get how back in the day it made sense for them to come in and be the victors and be all like, it's ours, we're the best, by the way, we're the heroes. But these days it's like, what about it hurts us to admit
and
that
maybe
there was fault on both sides?
Maybe it's a distraction. A lot. I notice that a lot of times, you know, they'll make this problem that's really, really supposed to be big, and they'll try, you know, and they want to, but it's to distract us from something else that they're doing.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well,
and
that's
maybe,
definitely happening.
Like, let me spend a couple billion dollars on a wall, but really, I'm going to spend $100 billion on this thing over here, you know, so.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh.
So, you'll complain
totally
about this thing I'm over here instead of pay attention to this other thing, so.
You have a kind heart. I didn't want to darken it with my negative feelings of the government, but for sure, that's definitely happening.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, paying attention to those narratives and then taking control of the true narrative and not coming at people in a combative way, but coming at them in a very truthful way. Like, this is what's really happening. You don't got to make things up, because some of the things I feel like the media makes up about the things that are going on in the border just totally aren't happening. And then they just totally ignore the things that are happening. So
they're also focusing on the wrong situations. I'm all like, guys, what's wrong that these guys are headed this way? What's going on? What are they leaving? Could we maybe take a look at that?
Right. Yeah.
Like, there's so many people who have decided, even the joke I made earlier about the people taking the boats over from the other, they felt there was something they had to run away from.
Right.
Same with these people. I was like,
absolutely.
Why? Like, we are, number one, if you want to be what America pretends it is, then it's definitely for them. They're running away from something. They need a refuge. That's what we're supposed to be. Right. Right. In the idyllic beginnings, sure. But even when they were, like, the whole news is talking about this other stuff. And I was like, can we discuss for a second? Like, what can we do to help them in the, like, where's the rest of their family? Like, what's happened to them? Is there a dictator in somewhere that we need to, like, we love getting involved. So let's, like, swing in and say, like, hey, don't do that. Or figure something else out, get into some sort of helping, as opposed to just a lot of avoidance.
Yeah, I agree completely and totally with you, which is one of the reasons that I am doing creating that Indigenous Film Festival, because when I was through my travels to Mexico, I met other filmmakers that are trying to tell those stories on the Guatemala border and Mexican border. There's like a whole Indigenous tribe there that are just getting slaughtered. And I forget the name of the filmmaker, I apologize, but they did a documentary on it, and I was like, well, we need to, so that's another thing is, like, so as a filmmaker and an activist, I'm trying to get those other stories that probably wouldn't be heard and give them a platform to be heard. So, and that film festival is happening March 20th through the 21st, the last weekend of South by Southwest at the Mexican American Cultural Center here in Austin, Texas.
In 2020, March 2020.
2020. Gotta have that 2020 vision, man.
Yeah.
So, and it's all about Turtle Island and that prophecy and bringing it up, rising it up. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Do you think your creativity is going to stay focused on this until you feel like there's enough education out there, until the stories are all being told?
And then I'll slowly slink back into the crowd and just disappear.
Well, no. Well, that's something that, you know, in the I talk to a lot of people creatively because we work on these big projects and we get ourselves involved in something and we put our heart and our soul into it, and then it finishes. And then it's like, oh God, what do I do next? And I feel like there's always something to do next, but there's, but some people don't have that vision. You clearly have that vision by your reaction of like, wait, there's so much to do.
I have a long list of stuff. If I could do, if I had the means, the money, the will, you know, the avenue, the port, you know, but you know, I don't mind being supportive too. Like, I don't mind taking a back seat, letting someone else have the spotlight, you know. I don't think I'm spotlight hungry, you know, but, but I do, you know, and all of it to me is interconnected. See, that's the way I think like a spider. That's part of my medicine, spider medicine. And I think that's what you're seeing, where I make all these connections in my mind of like, you know, how things are, how people see things and so forth. So I make the film to help, you know, bring to light my community. And then I create the film festival that helps support the other indigenous, you know, filmmakers, you know, and then, you know, so it's all connected to me. It's all feeding each other. There are these little streams that feed into the giant river that go to the ocean, that, you know, that's how I see it.
That's good.
You know, and I have another project. I don't even know if I should mention it, but until it's done, but I have a white paper on it already that I really want to help the people on the res, people off the res, federally recognized tribes, non-recognized tribes. It would really help us on an economic level.
Yeah.
Gain some status and power.
Nice.
So if that project goes through, that would be really awesome too.
You're smart enough to accomplish it. You certainly are. You got all the skills. I like that you have that you mentioned your spider vision, because it's like I always, when I talk to people, try to connect the larger story of their lives for them because they don't see it. But you are so
you must
clear.
Have the spider's vision. Spider medicine.
Maybe. If only just because I like to think of the longer story of your life. Like, people get caught up in their spots. Like, I'm 40, so people get like caught up in being 40, and I'm like, it's okay. I'm halfway through. It's all right. I was like, I got another good 40 in me. That's a lot. I've done a lot of stuff. I could do a lot more stuff. So I'm not worried about it. And I'm also like, I try to connect ideas for people, especially because when I teach, I try to help them figure out what they should do with their creative impulses. I mean, part of why I even do this podcast is to show people the different creative careers you can have. If you're interested, and if you're like Fox Red Sky and you're interested in doing activism and you feel like, I want to be an activist, but I have these creative tendencies, but I don't know how to combine them. And yeah, I get that the creative stuff can feel like silly. There's a lot of stuff that's silly. Comedy can be silly. Theater can be silly. Any level of this kind of stuff that I'm usually deeply promoting can be silly, but you can use it. You can use both the skills that you develop in the classes and also the ability to get the communication out there with film, with TV, with podcasting, with anything, any way to get your voice out to the world. You can share your message and you can help make the world a better place. And some people don't realize they have that power.
This is true. And I want to quote one of my favorite comedians.
Do it.
And I might not be quoting him exactly, but Jim Carrey said the greatest gift you have is the ability to affect people, your ability to affect people, how you make them feel, you know. And I you know, my jam is to make everyone feel good, you know. I want to lift everybody up, you know, because this is a saying in the teepee: when one of us is healed, we're all healed. You know, when you get well, you're getting everyone well.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm trying to do ultimately. That's my world domination plan.
Yeah. Sounds like a good plan.
It's just to lift people up. And some people get trapped in those negative narratives, whether it's out of You know, because, and I know this is something that some of my my res sisters have talked to me, my Apache res sisters have talked to me about, is that there, it's like the crab is trying to get out of the bucket, and all the other crabs are trying to pull them down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so even in my own communities and in some of the Native communities, mm-hmm. that's something that we're going to have to heal from, some of that generational trauma that's been given to us. And, you know, we got to acknowledge it, you know. So I try not to let the haters affect me, you know, some haters, or, and I try not to let the people that are too positive, because I still want to improve, you know, on my game. I don't want to think, oh, well, this is the best I can do. I know I can do better.
Oh, there's always room to grow.
Yeah. So.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast and talking to me and sharing your message.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, thank you.
Thanks for listening to Yes But Why Podcast. Check out all our episodes on yesbutwhypodcast.com or check out all the content on our network, HC Universal, at hcuniversalnetwork.com.